Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by BentoBox, a full-service marketing and commerce platform that helps restaurants get discovered, make more money, and engage their diners. Join over 8,000 restaurants already using BentoBox today to deliver better hospitality. Visit getbento.com/chef today to get your first month free. That's getbento.com/chef.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Mary Alexander Metaphor, who is a kurabito, or a brewmaster's support, at the Terada Honke in Chiba Prefecture near Tokyo. Mary is a Frank Tunisian, and he has made sake at 5 breweries in Japan for the last 8 years. And Terada Honke is distinctively unique and known for its strong focus on natural sake making. Here, you are not talking about natural-oriented brewing sake, but the never-ending pursuit of minimum intervention to maximize the power of nature. The brewery was founded 349 years ago, but their philosophy shifted towards natural fairly recently. So today we'll discuss why Mary decided to pursue his career in sake making, why Terada Honke chose to become a natural sake brewer, its mind-blowing unique sake, and much, much more. But before you start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Mary Alexander Metaphor. Hello, Mary-san. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. And thank you for staying up so late. You are in Japan, so it's really near midnight. And so to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay, so I'm from France and Tunisia, both. So I was born in France, but I spent part of my life in Tunisia too. So I grew up between the two cultures with the very rich food culture. So what I've eaten since I'm a kid is really really rich. I've eaten so many stuff, and that made me so I can eat everything. I dislike nothing. So I'm open to any kind of cuisine, any kind of dishes. I fell into the passion of sake because I think this kind of food.
Right. I think, well, at least you picked the two of the best parts of France and Tunisia, the great food. So, yeah, I'm very jealous, kind of. So, and then, so how did you get into Japanese sake?
Well, as I think many people, I started to go to some Japanese restaurants, but most of them were running by non-Japanese, so they were serving at the end like a free baijiu or like distillated alcoholic beverages. And I thought that was sake, but once I've been to a real Japanese izakaya in France, and and we ordered Nihonshu, the Japanese sake, the real one, and from that moment, I got really astonished about, by this amazing and unique taste. Of course, it was kind of a shock because it is totally different. It's different than wine, different than beer. So it's something new, kind of taste or family of flavor appear to your world experience. And it was fantastic and also really mysterious because it's hard to catch the taste of sake. And second time I was more prepared, so I could more maybe analyze and find out the composition of the flavor, the taste, the aroma, but still sometimes it's still like really difficult to find the right approach. And it led me to want to know more, to want to make it also, to produce it, because of this always uncatchable, property of sake. It's always challenging you, always. You're always running after to find out exactly how it's made, why this taste appear was. So yeah, it's a kind of this relationship that I have with sake after it.
Interesting. Yeah, so that's, you really pointed out interesting aspect of Japanese sake, right? Because it's so diverse, just made with rice and the koji and water, but it's just the flavor profile goes really, really wide and deep, and it doesn't seem like even the same kind of beverage made out of the simple three ingredients. So, yeah, interesting. And then, making sake versus drinking, they're completely different things, but you decided dive into making sake. So when and why did you go to Japan?
Well, I majored in chemistry, but also I studied philosophy at university. And following my studies, I started an internship in a very large pharmaceutical company in the production of antivenom. So it's basically antibodies against the snakes and scorpions venoms. And but for number of reasons, I had to quit. So I wanted to do something completely different and live a great journey. I had this fascination for sake at the same time. So I had also, I practiced karate for several years. I also had interest in all the Japanese movies, I was still young, young and with enough energy to just completely change my life and try first. So why not?
Right. Well, sounds very simple, but it's really a big dive. So yeah, I'm so glad you did that too, because you are in a really right place, which we're going to talk about now. So before you joined Terada Honke, I heard that you worked at the four other breweries before joining the brewery last year. So where did you work and what did you learn at those four breweries?
So I started in Nagano. So I had no plan, to be honest, when I came to Japan. I didn't know where to go, who to speak to get inside a brewery to get hired. And that time in 2013, it was still really new, almost no books, almost no informations. So I had to search by myself on the net. I couldn't speak in Japanese as well. So it was hard. And it's not like now where most of the breweries, they want to hire foreigners because of their commercial goals. They want to open to the world. No, that was really confidential, and so they had a lot of reserve, or they were hesitating to hire me. So first I knocked to many doors, and I was helped by farmers. I was living in farmers' places. We were working together, and in return, in exchange, they were providing me food and somewhere to sleep. Like it's a woofing, really common or like famous system to travel abroad for almost no money. And we knocked to many doors, and most of the breweries in the region of Nagano, they refused to accept me, to hire me, even for free.
Mm.
And, one small brewery, we came back to them because we said, like, it's the, like, everyone said no, and they finally accepted me as a, like, for an internship of 4 months.
Wow, you must be very persistent and really passionate about getting the job.
No, they felt pity for me.
I don't know. Right.
But now they are like a family, and it was a very small brewery, but which now is it got bigger and bigger and really famous. But at that time, it was small and almost unknown brewery, which is Okazaki Shuzo, the Kirei, Shinshu Kirei Sake.
Okay.
And it's a couple that was making the sake, and they had the kids, and I was taking care of the kids and learning slowly, like how to make sake, and so that was the first experience. I've learned a lot, but mostly how to wash and how to move inside the brewery, and I learned what the role of each tools and the process also. I could see, I could realize exactly step by step how the sake is made. But at that time, I wasn't like responsible for any delicate task, or like following a fermentation, or making the starter, or pressing. I was just participating. Yeah. But it was perfect as a first experience. Mm-hmm. And now they are doing a lot of sake. The amount, they renew almost all their equipments, and they are in the some of their sake are ranked in the best sake in Japan. So
wow. So then did you decide to switch? I moved to other brewery to learn more.
To learn more, and I needed a bigger place to also get a visa, a working visa. So that's why I had to shift for a place that has a potential of trading with foreign countries, because like it's hard to get a visa for making sake. So every time we play on the words, and we justify my hiring by, okay, I'm a kind of commercial, I do business, I try to export sake, but in fact I'm doing this. But no one come to check, like And then if someone comes, like, we can say, yeah, I need to learn, I need to know how the sake is made to sell it, which is right. True. But, I'm actually not selling it.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, so I've switched for a brewery in Shimane, which is much in the southern Japan. It was Gassan Yoshida Shuzo, which also...
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah, well-known brewery. And, the second time we were more staff, so... I would say the second step of learning how to make sake was more how learning how to deal with colleagues, Japanese colleagues, learning the hierarchy, learning exactly how, 15 people company is running and is moving. And I had my first responsibilities as a kamaya, which is the rice when we steam the rice this step, so I first they put me there, and I got really close after 3 months. I got really close to the kashira, the head brewer assistant, and I've learned lots how to be with other and inside a Japanese company, which is totally different than like foreign companies. So, Like steaming rice, how much time every day, how to estimate exactly the time, the right time.
Right. Just for the sake of, we want to get into Terada Shuzo soon. Yeah. So what are the two other places? Because, Nagano and the Shimane, they're completely different region, and also I'm sure that the water changes, everything changes. So where to other brewers?
The third one was in Saijo in Hiroshima, East. Ooh, Hiroshima.
Nice. So
also a famous place for the massive production sake, but also for really qualitative sake. And so I stayed there 1.5 years. So one season in Shimane, 1.5 years in Saijo, and then 5 years in Nagoya, at Banjo Jozo, the Kuheji.
Hmm. Wow. So yeah. You really covered different styles of sake, and it's just very impressive how you, the first, you didn't know anything about even the language to anything, and then you really, in 8 years, up to now, you really became very, very knowledgeable, skilled worker. So, yeah, that's amazing. And so it's, you've been in Japan, right? So do you, have you learned anything other than sake making, like being Japan, like culturally? Is there anything you got impressed with or something?
First Japanese.
Oh, by the way, this nurse, he's made his Japanese is almost perfect. I thought he grew up in Japan and went to Paris and then came back here. So that's that fluent. So, yeah.
So besides the sake, I would say maybe my biggest accomplishment was being able to learn Japanese. I also, of course, I got involved into rice farming. So I'm like the previous company in Nagoya. They farm about 20 hectares of rice paddies. So it's very big. It's all Yamadenshiki and Omachi, but it's not organic style. So yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, you really covered, from everything, even from farming. That's very impressive. Okay. All right, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll dive into Terada Honke's super unique sake and the philosophy behind it. So please stay with us.
Did you know that over 70% of diners research a restaurant online before ordering from or going in person? Your digital front door is more important than ever. Let BentoBox design and build you a beautifully branded website. BentoBox websites provide sleek design and seamless content management, creating impactful first impressions and converting visitors into customers. And with built-in commerce and marketing tools like online ordering, gift cards, automated email, and more, you can also grow your revenue and keep your diners coming back. Join over 8,000 restaurants that leverage BentoBox to power their digital presence and deliver great hospitality. Visit getbento.com/chef today to get your first month free. That's getbento.com/chef.
Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Sparks, host of the new podcast, The One Recipe, from the team behind The Splendid Table. This pod is all about that one recipe that you lean on. The one you share with friends, the one you make when you need a little love, and the one you know will work every single time. Every week, I talk with chefs and gifted cooks from all over the world about their one and the story behind it. We're here to help you build your kitchen library one dish at a time. Follow The One Recipe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Mehdi Alexander Metaphor, who is a Krabito or Brewmaster's support at Terada Honke in Chiba Prefecture near Tokyo. Mehdi is French, Franco-Tunisian, and he has made sake at 5 breweries in Japan for the last 8 years. So let's talk about Terada Honke. So Terada Honke is very unique and famous for its natural sake production, and it's not just natural style. It's really, really extremely natural. And we're going to talk about it in a moment. But brewery was founded in 1673, and the current owner, Masaru Terada, is 24th generation of the family business. But the brewery has not been so natural over the last 300 years or so. So what happened to their sake production philosophy?
Like the owner... Actually, the previous generation of owner, he got sick, he fell ill, and find out that through fermentation, because in Japan, the art of fermentation is really deep, and it's in every part of the food culture, he find out that using fermentation and natural fermentation involved like natural microorganisms, natural ones, not selected ones, but wild ones, could make him feel better. And actually, he succeed to recover a little, but wasn't enough. But that was also his idea, is to switch totally to things that are really healthy. It starts from the rice itself. It needs to be like organic. It needs to be done or farmed without any fertilizer and chemical pesticides. So. Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of occasion after to being more say precise on this part. But for the history or for the choice of switching to a natural sake, that was the reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you specify, what is the sake making philosophy of Terada Honke now after the previous owner recovered from such a serious disease just by going natural?
Okay. This is a really large question. So deep question. Like, maybe I'm going to start to speak. I will go to several direction, but at the end, like, I think our people are listening will understand what I want to say. I want to take you in with me into a different philosophy. our approach of sake. And I have to speak about sake first and say a few things about it. Okay. Of course, we can say that natural sake is necessarily made with organic rice. It's not only a matter of organic rice, it's a matter of mindset and how we think our relationship to the world, to the environment, to the nature. We say it's organic rice, but there is also no addition of any selected microorganisms. They are all living inside the brewery. The microorganisms we use are the lactic bacteria, the yeast fungi, and the koji also, the koji fungi, the mold. So those three microorganisms, they are living inside the brewery. So we do not procure from supplier. We do not buy them. They are living. And making natural sake is the ability of creating a habitat where those living organisms can grow, can increase, and can live well. So basically, it's just the management or the how to help those microorganisms to live and to interact with each other or with the rice itself. We are following a movement, a natural movement. So so it's kind of really a holistic way of thinking or I want you to imagine a one big circle and inside another one smaller and inside another one smaller and so on. The biggest one is a big space with a lot of energy. It's the energy of the earth and the sun. It's kind of, the universe. And the other one is the nature and the mountains, the rice paddies. And the other one inside is actually the society and made by, composed with people, with art, with philosophy, with concepts. And the smaller one inside is the brewery. And finally, the smallest one inside, in the middle, is the tank. All those spaces, they are connected. They are not so the limits of those circles. It's porous. It lets energy and things go through, pass through. So making natural sake is first being aware or about this. So all those ecosystem or habitat, they are open. They are not closed. So brewery, basically, what you find inside the brewery is exactly what you find inside the tanks. And the microorganisms are almost the same. They are living on the wall, they are living on the floor, on the roof, inside the wooden pillar of the brewery. They are living everywhere. And we are keeping the balance. So that's why brewery is not closed. There is no door. Like air comes through, a large amount of air comes through. Windows are always open. And we never wash. Why we never wash and we never clean so far and we never use soap? It's just to preserve the natural habitat. And then there are those living microorganisms, they can happily do their life. And they are confront themselves to other microorganisms that, and sometimes they fight together, but it's the way they become stronger and stronger. So we respect this kind of fight or confrontation. And what is really funny is that when you make rice, you need good organic earth, organic material. And microorganisms, fungi, they decompose the some bigger elements and turn it into nutrients. So in the rice fields, microorganisms feed the rice and let the rice grow and become bigger. And inside the tank, it's the opposite. Rice is the food of the microorganism and the fermentation occur. So that's the philosophy behind the natural fermentation.
Right. So basically, it's a full trust in nature. And the assumption is that if we don't lose the balance, I'm trying to intervene and do something silly and lose the balance of the nature, which is always already perfect, then we're going to go to the wrong place. And what Teodos Hunke is doing is just trying to preserve as what's given by nature, and which seems to be very successful. And yeah, I think one thing I quote from the website of Teodos Hunke, so life goes either into rotting or fermenting. And if the healthy fermentation loses its balance, it becomes rotting. And I think this is what learned from the 23rd generation, Mr. Terada, who got sick because he lost the balance in his body. So this application of healthy balance, the pursuit of healthy balance, I think is really amazing. And what's actually happening at the Sake Brewery, which you tremendously help, is there's so many elements. So let's just talk about these some elements involved in actual sake production. So such as rice, yeast, and you mentioned koji, but what do you do practically to become so natural?
As I said, just the ability of creating good medium, that are good habitat, that are liked by the organism and they come by themselves. Like we are just preparing mashes, tanks, and they come by themselves. Of course, for the koji, it's a little different because we also cultivate the koji by ourselves. But when you make a starter, when you start a starter, to make a starter, you just smash rice and of course, mix it with water and with koji, and then just wait. And if there is the right density, first lactic bacteria will turn the sugar into lactic acid and make the medium enough acid to prevent contamination. Or I don't like the term of contamination. In sake breweries, in sake world, or in the production world, we all, like most of the people that are working with more recent methods, as the Sokujomoto or the Hon Sokujomoto, it's a ways of making starter with addition of industrial lactic acid. They always speak about contamination as there is a kind of a really conservative way to prevent or to keep something almost sterilized. Natural sake is all about just letting nature doing itself things. So the starter, you have a lot of bacteria, you have a lot of different kind of yeast. Some are weak, some are stronger, some of them can produce a lot of alcohol, some are just there. Maybe they are just doing their life without almost no producing any alcohol or any good acid, or like in a society, like in the nature, like which everyone has its own role, but they are all different, and some are maybe more important or not more important, but just for us in our goal of making sake. So if they are living together, they are competing, they can do some association against another type of yeast. So basically, when you have enough acidic medium, good yeast came inside the mash, and they start the fermentation, and they start to turn starch and other compound into sake, into alcohol. Making also natural sake is about not trying to control the time, because natural sake take its own rhythm. If you want to produce a large amount of sake, it's hard, because the speed of fermentation is always different. The speed of fermentation, we call it the cinetic, like how fast the degradation, the decomposition is happening. So sometimes to make a starter, it can take 50 days, it can take 30 days, it can take 40 days. So if you are in a rush, if you need to hurry, you cannot do a natural sake. And main mash can take even longer. Like in the average for Junmai or Junmai Daiginjo, it's 20 days to 30 or 35 days to finish a sake, to reach the right amount of alcohol.
Right. So basically, I think the process sounds like you grow healthy microorganisms so that they can beat bad guys, so you don't have any contamination. What do you use as a kind of like chemical oriented term? So the balance that you create patiently with long time, that really keeps the balance of the natural power. And then I heard you, of course, you use organic rice, and as the milling rate, lots of sake has a low milling rate because it has an outer side of the rice that hold another microorganisms and different flavors, and lots of sake undiluted, unpasteurized, non-alcohol added, and those elements really create a unique sake, Terra Honke. So let's talk about some of the sakes you make. So maybe you can give us a couple examples of that represent Terra Honke's philosophy.
Yeah, but can I add something just about to introduce the taste of Terra Honke?
Sure.
So about natural sake. And also I had to add two things. Another thing is that we are working really with a lot of happiness, and we sing for some of the step of sake brewing. We sing, and that is a way to thank the microorganism to feel closer to also this amazing a world and amazing things that is occurring. And it's also a way to measure the time. So singing... Mm.
Well, the singing at the sake brewery is a part of the traditional way to make it. And maybe because people don't get bored or just...
Exactly.
Right. And also, I think... I've been to winery where people play jazz or classic music in the fermentation room. And it's kind of, I don't know how scientifically you can prove, but those wines, they said taste better. And this could be some elements to make the bacteria happy as far as you sing well.
it's hard to prove it, but what I really feel is that it increases my sensitivity and my creativity. So I'm more it makes me more able to create taste and to have a very pure approach of life. And we go back to this holistic philosophy of like trying to keep the balance everywhere in the rice fields or and inside the tanks and inside the brewery. So definitely it has a lot of good benefits for sure. And I want to trust that also it is good for organisms. So yeah, natural sake is also about this trying to be as much as possible like creative and receptive, sensitive to the every kind of things around us that can give us more inspiration to create taste. And it's also about using as less as possible energy. So when we wash, we are really careful of about the amount of water we use. We don't use any soap. We use sometimes like hot, very hot water, but not in a large amount. Also, we definitely care about all those issues. So, and then we go to the end, or not to the end, but about the taste and about the profile, aroma profile. Basically, making sake is melting rice, is turning rice into liquid form. Okay? That's what matters to us. It's how far we can turn rice into liquid form and how much alcohol rate we can reach. So I wish like every consumer could ask to the producer, how far do you melt the rice? When you use 1,000 kilo of rice, at the end, how much of this amount remain in solid form? So how much has melted? Which is the proportion which has melted? That's because the taste doesn't come from the water. It comes from the rice itself and, of course, the fermentation, all the products that are produced by the microorganism, acid or amino acid, sugar. So I go back to what I was saying about time. More you take time for the main mash, and the more you have the chance to melt the rice. So first, for Terra da Honke, which is important, is to get rich and full-bodied sake. So we are really, really trying hard to melt the rice. So for some people, maybe they will know that this term is kasabuai. Kasabuai is which is the proportion of rice which has melted. And normally for the average is around 60%. That means you end up with 40%, or for 1,000 kilo, for example, you end up with 400 kilo of solid material at the end. So more than half of the rice involved in the fermentation has melted.
Right.
That's the average. But in Terra d'Anque, we try to reach 20%. So we are basically more than the double. So inside the bottle of sake, you have double amount of rice. And you said we use almost unpolished rice. So it's not like something, it's not a mystery. The taste comes from the element of rice. It comes essentially from the fat, from the mineral, from the protein. Sugar is turned into the starch is turned into sugar, and it's turned into alcohol. So if you polish too much the rice, like you remove half of it, you will remove all the things that create the taste, and you end up with a two-dimensional sake that has only sugar and alcohol, and the umami disappear. The acid also almost disappear. And so Kimoto has a very unique ability. The Kimoto way of making sake have a very unique ability. It's to turn the protein into very, very, very large amount of amino acid. So if you keep rice as itself, like almost unpolished, and you combine it with Kimoto way of making sake, you end up with something really, really rich. And if you keep the fermentation going far, it's the best combo for me.
Right. So one of those Kimoto tsukuri, that's opposite of Sokujo, right? Sokujo is like inoculated, kind of efficient way to make sake. Yeah. But the Kimoto was before all those technologies, new ideas was introduced. So you have Gonin Musume, that's the Kimoto-based sake. And the other thing I really was intrigued by is Katori. I think this is available in the States too. So this is Junmai. And Katori is like a milling rate is 80% or 90%, two types. And that's ridiculous because usually Japanese premium sake at least is milled down to 70%. I mean, the remaining part is 70%. And some extreme sake goes into like 20% remaining or some kind of like the more milled, the better. It's like a wrong mindset. And can you maybe talk about this Katori, that's Junmai sake?
Of course. Katori, the unique things of Katori is that until 90%, when you keep 90% of the sake, of the rice, you keep the fat. The fat will be decomposed into kind of oil. So inside the mash, you can see that there is oil. This oil is a new kind of new dimension of the taste, give a new dimension, a richer taste. And what something is, I think, or I find that like difficult with sake is sometimes the ethanol, the alcohol, is too high and give a dry impression. Like, and it's it make the sake become really sharp and sometimes too sharp. But the oil has the ability to cover it, to cover this sharpness and make it smoother. So you have the large amount of protein that are turned into amino acids. So it's really rich in terms of umami. It has enough sugar, glucose, because it's important, of course. And you have the lactic acid produced in large amounts because of the Kimoto whey. And you have the oil. All this mixed up made Katori. And it's really unique. The richness of this sake, the smoothness of this sake is really unique. And even when you are working, I will speak as a kurabito, working with almost unpolished rice, it's so enjoyable, because rice doesn't stick, because you can feel more. You can even feel the fat, the oil on the surface of the rice. The rice is really smooth when you're working, when you're like making the koji or so. Actually, it's fantastic. The mash when you it's on the fermentation is on the processing. The mash has nuts, walnuts, almond flavor. It's so unique. And the color of the mash is yellow. And when you mix it, you can feel the density. Very, very, it's so dense. It's not too liquid, like, because of a large amount of water. So, of course, there is some trick, and because using 90 almost unpolished rice is hard. It's hard to melt almost unpolished rice. So there is some like way that are keeping secret, but that kind of adjustment. But the thing is, it gives you an access to the rice and the fermentation taste. It's unbelievable.
Right. So, sounds like it's really the ultimate representation of the balance that we discussed. So, natural lactic acid and the sugar and the fat in rice, which I feel like we've been wasting a lot of this tastiness by milling down too much. But I also heard that this Katori is used to serve God. I mean, at the shrine, at the Katori shrine. So it really means a lot for Ruri, I'm sure. This is a precious sake. It's served to the God at the shrine, Katori shrine. So very impressive. And I mean, I wish we could just go through everything you have. But for example, you have a whole grain sake, which I've never heard of. It's almost like, because it's the sake is never kind of malted, because if you mill down outside, you cannot malt the rice. So, but this is kind of like malted style. And also you have the Bodaimoto, which is really the most ancient style of sake making by cultivating lots of lactic acid naturally. So this must be really challenging for you, and but most intriguing part of sake making, because it's the extreme case of naturalness. So what's most challenge for you to make sake at Terada Shuzo?
It was to reset my mind. Because I had my whole until I got inside Terada Honke, I used to to work on with Sokujo, and really highly polished rice. And I had a few times with Yamaha also, but it was to reset. But I was ready to. I was ready, and I wanted. That's why I switched to Terra de Honke, and I had the intuition. In my whole journey, I had the intuition that there is other things maybe that I would feel closer to, another philosophy, another. So I was preparing myself to find what I found in Terra de Honke. And the most difficult or the most challenging things was to be not overflowed by the new taste and the new, because it's when you have spoken about the unpolished again, my issue. That's also so interesting, and it's, you have a kind of a mattress inside your head and with a lot of information, and you keep adding information, new flavor, new taste, and it increases all the possibility. So now I see so many possibilities. Like, I'm sure that sake is still at its almost a baby age, even it has 2,000 years history, and even more if you go back to Korea and China. Because actually, what Terra de Honke is making is close to what was produced before. The recent addition, the previous, this like 100 years, the recent 100 years, the addition of kind of removed sake, it's more its global aspect. It came from China, came through Korea, and ended up in Japan. And in Japan, it has a long, 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 long life with a different form or aspect, closer to what we're doing now in Terra de Honke. It's so recent. The polishing machine came recently, like they have less than 80 years old. The selected yeast also, especially the ginjo for making ginjo, they are so, so recent. So if you remove those two additions in terms of the process, I think you can reach what is real sake, and you can reach the DNA. Of course, I don't blame or I don't think that it's not relevant to make high polished sake based on high polishing rates of rice, but maybe it made it too exclusive. It made the sake too exclusive and less able to be like shared with other style of food, with other food culture. So going back to what is sake, what sake is, the DNA, how we can be a nice approach to also re-increase the consumption of sake, because it's definitely decreasing, and the interest in sake also in Japan, for example. So I'm working on those issues now. I'm trying to,
Right. So, and then, Terra de Honke seems very forward-minded, and unlike most traditional breweries, it welcomes you, like no Japanese gravito, although you seem to be almost more Japanese than a regular Japanese people. But do you have other non-Japanese kurabito at Terra de Honke?
I think because of the corona, they are not almost not like it's difficult to come to Japan. Mm. But I heard that almost every year some people they come like foreigners they come to for internship. So they come few months, couple of months, couple of weeks, and most of them they are winemakers. They have like already experience in fermentation. Terayonke is always welcoming people, and I go back to what I was saying about my circles, my space, those ecosystem, and I said it's all about exchanging. And Terra da Honke has this ability to exchange with the outside world and to take from this world ideas and inspiration to enhance their art. So when brewery is close, too much close, almost like there is no any more exchange with the world, with the outside, actually it rotten. Easy. And
right.
And there's no rebirth. It keep itself like this, and then it died.
Right. So this comes a full circle, right? Like rotten, there are two paths. Life can get to rottening state or fermentation state, which keeps living forever. So by having someone like I've been very impressed how much you've been contributing to Japanese traditional sake industry. And I really think it's so valuable to have someone like you regularly, constantly, for the Japanese sake industry for the future. So, what are your plans and dreams?
My plans to stay there and learn and feel more and more deeply how Terada's Honke brewery is working and to analyze this model of this unique model of it's not just a brewery. As I said, it's a whole ecosystem with a cafe. Also, there is a cafe and because we are not only producing sake, we are producing like narazuke and ume juice and many, many kinds of food based on fermentation. So Kurabito, they experience every time this kind of food and so they enrich their potential of creation. So they are always this kind of thing. So I want to go deeper and deeper in this direction of getting more inspired by the environment, by the mountain, by the rice field, by this whole ecosystem, and see how far it can help me to create new sake. So my dreams is, of course, to become once to make maybe my own brewery. I have to go back to France. I cannot stay anymore because of the private issues. My family asked me to go to come back. So in short mid-term, I will have to go back to my country. So I'm also working on a book and also, yeah, I want to improve if I can add something. Maybe it's just because I can speak well Japanese. I can help. I can read. But I'm still, how to say, a foreigner. So there is always a distance. So this distance allows me to also see things that some people cannot see. So it has limits, but also benefits. And I would love that to create, if I can, for my brewery, like easier style of working, also improving the efficiency. That can be natural but efficient, and then give more free time to the collaborator. Improve the work conditions and some. It's all, there is so many things to work on. There's so much things.
Right. Well, keep me posted. Maybe you can come back. You have so much to share. And you're such a philosopher and such a hard worker, and you really have tremendously wide and deep views to the world. So, yeah, good luck. And hopefully I can taste your sake made in France. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would love to. If I can reach this goal, this step, yeah, why not?
Right.
I'm trying to expand sake's roots or territory.
Right. Okay, so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
I only have one. I recently opened an Instagram account.
Okay.
It's Nomad Sake Brewer, because I've traveled.
Oh, okay. Nomad Sake Brewer. Right. Yeah, that's a really good name. That's exactly who you are. All right. So good luck, and thank you so much for joining us today, Mehdi.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japaneseats@theheritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japaneseats is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. We'll take a spring break for the next few weeks, so we'll see you at the beginning of May. And our engineer today is Amin Spenjan. Thank you for listening. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.